We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, yo, welcome into the CHGO White Sox podcast presented by PointsBet. Use promo code CHGO when you sign up to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. Welcome into our little post-game show that we do here. It was recently described as a place for fans to be able to cheer. It's also a place where fans were able to celebrate in their rage. And Herb, today the White Sox lose 12-9 in an embarrassing way, blowing a sixth-run lead in the ninth inning. How's your Monday, Herb?
Bad. Very bad. Like, this is why when you see people like our manager, Tony La Russa, or people earlier this year bitch about the unwritten rules and scoring and stealing up six, anything you hear in the future, you tell them people to shut the fuck up. You need to score as many runs as you are allowed to. Stop putting your foot off the pedal. It's throat stomping time. The White Sox, you could see in that ninth inning, relaxed. Oh, man. 8-2. AJ Pollock hit his first White Sox home run. Man, fuck the Guardians. Relaxed. Air, grand slam, bat toss. Then another three-run homer from Josh Naylor. And I like the headline by our guy, Steven Nicholas, who's our producer. Naylor in the coffin. Naylor in the coffin. Barely knew her. See what I did there? This was a demoralizing loss. As I put in the headline, this reminds me of that 7-1 lead we had in Kansas City. I think it was 2016. And they started off with either David Robertson or another pitcher, and they gave up the lead, and Kansas City walked us off in that game. It was demoralizing then, 2016. It was a horrible year. This is probably the worst loss I can think about in my history. It's the Guardians, firstly. And remember, Sean, I was the one who said, don't let Jose Ramirez beat you. Let XYZ Guardian beat you. And Josh Naylor said, hey, I got you, brother. Hey, I know White Sox fans are pissed at Josh Naylor. What is he supposed to do? I would toss my bat to the goddamn moon if I tied that game up. And when he hit that three-run home run, the same goddamn thing. He was hyped up. If you're the White Sox and you're mad, do something about it. Not hit him. Get him out next time. I'm just tired of this team. Win six in a row, and then that. We get quality effort. The best pitching performance of Michael Kopech's career. Professional career. And then we waste it. I just don't know why we're White Sox fans sometimes. Because this loss hurts. Physically hurts.
That's Herb Lawrence. You can follow him on Twitter at EchnerWall23. I'm Sean Anderson. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson. And, you know, why not let Herb rant and rave here a bit? Because, again, blowing a six-run lead here is just absolutely embarrassing. And we got a ton of comments flowing in. Shout out to all of you guys that are hanging out with us at 11:45 p.m. This is, you know, the show. of the passion. You know, you right there saying, why are we White Sox fans? It's the same reason why 86 people are in here questioning the same exact thing. Let's start with the eighth inning or the ninth inning, because I think that's exactly where you want to start. Mm-hmm. The Tim Anderson error cannot happen. The Yoan Moncada error is showboaty. And I think maybe this is what people were talking about when they were giving Yoan Moncada so much hate, is the fact that that is an easy ground ball that he should have had. That is Austin Hedges running up the line. He should have gotten in front of that ball. Like Stoney said, he took a stab at it. It bounced off. And that's really where things just started to turn for the absolute worst for the Sox. What was the moment that you thought was like, oh, shit, we're in trouble here?
When Tim missed that ball coming in from a great throw from A.J. Pollock, which is a single. You gave up a home run, wash it away. It's 8-3. Then the next batter hits a single to left. A.J. Pollock throws a nice relay throw to Tim, lackadaisical, hits the ball right in the middle of his glove. That ball goes all the way to first base, past the first baseman, and Jimenez, I think, or Rosario, goes all the way to third. That was when I knew. And then when Yoan made that error, the next play, I was like, what are we doing? What are the hell are we doing here? This is not what a championship caliber team does. When they see blood, they attack. When it's time to close out games, they close them out. And I'm not even going to give any grief to Tony La Russa. You guys would have did the same thing with a 6-run lead. There's no putting Liam in. There's no putting Kendall Graveman in at that time. And I didn't think Tanner Banks was all that bad. So it is incumbent on the White Sox to pick the goddamn ball up, throw it to first, get the job done. And then I did not like, I know you want to probably get to it later, Jose Ramirez. There's a runner on first, so you can't really walk him there. I would have just let him hit the farthest home run ever. Pitch it to him. Get him out. But to walk him there with the base already occupied, it just gives life to the Guardians there.
You're talking about the 11th inning?
I'm talking about the ninth inning there, where they're up by 4 runs. It's still 8-4 after that error by Yoan Moncada. At that moment, I'm saying, okay, cool. There's 2 outs. Let Jose Ramirez hit the farthest home run he wants to. Pitch it down the middle. He can't tie this game up. 8-6, cool. I'll take it. Let's go with the next guy who's coming up, Owen Miller, with nobody up on the base pass. But we walk him. Miller hits a single. And, of course, you know what happened next with Josh Naylor. Absolutely murdering, 96-mile-per-hour fastball, because Josh Naylor knew that Liam Hendricks couldn't get his slider over because he was dirting a couple of those. So yeah, he saw that he can't get it over. So I'm going to sit 97 up top, and I'm going to murder it like he did.
99 miles per hour on that fastball from Liam Hendricks. And yeah, you're absolutely right. It's like people are wondering why he had that reaction. Well, he was sitting fastball. It's the only thing that Liam Hendricks could throw at that moment, and he can nail the top of the zone. That's exactly the only spot that Liam's been consistently nailing this year. Josh Naylor knew where that ball was going to be, and that's where, you know, that's why he ended up putting it where it ended up. I mean, that's why he has that reaction, where he has that bat flip. I want to go to something really quick. You're absolutely right about that's what went wrong with the ninth inning. I want to talk about what people are talking about in the comments here. Ryan saying this is nowhere near a championship caliber club. All of the hype and talk needs to stop until it's warranted. They might not be the second best team in their own division. I think I'd need to push back on that a little bit, but please, after they blow a lead like this, and especially to a division opponent, I want to know your thoughts on this, because I think that they're still a championship caliber club. But I don't know how you're feeling, especially in this moment, being, you know, after a 12-9 loss.
I don't get mad at a non-championship caliber team. Like that 2016 team, that was a terrible loss. I don't know, a team was shit, though. I knew that team was not going anywhere. This team, if you're telling me that you wouldn't want that lineup, and did we just not see all the starting pitchers post a sub-2 ERA in their last 7 starts? The pitching works. The bullpen usually works. And now we're getting the hitting. Don't tell me it's not a championship caliber team. They're just not playing as such. They have the studs. Now, the difference is, can they put it all together for a team effort to win more games than they lose. Right now, they're at 500. That's just unacceptable. I don't care if it's May and it's early. This loss is demoralizing. It's up to those guys, those 26 men, the coaching staff, the GM, swallow this loss hard. Come back tomorrow knowing you got one of your aces coming back in Lucas Giolito and erase this game. We got to hold on to it because it hurts. They can't. They got to be pissed about it and understand that this never happened again. Ever happen again. And that Guardians team is not better than you. They're not. And that's what the frustrating part. They've beaten you four times out of four times. And they're just showing you that the last couple of years is not a fluke. Every time they see it, when they change their name from the Indians to the Guardians, whatever. They see Chicago, they enjoy. They eat that shit right up.
Yeah, and Brian's saying they have to prove it on the field, Herb. I mean, I don't really.
So then, when they prove it on the field, then you're gonna say the champions. What do you mean? They have the lineup. Mean, are you mad? Are you here, Ryan, because you think this is an also ran third place AL Central team? No, you're here because you know this team is good. You know this team can be great, and they're not playing as such. So I don't know what you're talking about. I understand what you're saying. They are a championship team. If they're not. Then why are we here? Then why do we care? Well,
this post-game show should have been fairly, you know, innocuous. I mean, this should have been, you know, fairly cut and dry. I was going to have a cute little bit where we talk about the two errors that I thought mirrored each other. The fact that, you know, Gavin Sheets misses a right field fly ball in the first inning. And then, you know, Ahmed Rosario, who's also not an outfielder, he missed a fly ball in left field. Isn't that funny? Oh, isn't it funny that Tim Anderson had a throwing error at shortstop and Owen Miller on the other side of the diamond couldn't pick up a ground ball? Isn't that funny? And now we're talking about, is this team even a championship caliber team after a 6-game winning streak? I think it's a little bit too much. Fans love to overreact, and I do just want to say, calm down a little bit. This is an embarrassing loss, not only for you. It's not only an embarrassing loss to us as you know, doing the podcast. It has to be embarrassing for those players. And God, I hope it's embarrassing, because what a horrible way to lose that game. And I see people saying, you know, Liam's overrated, overhyped. I think he's figuring stuff out. And also, you know, we saw that Kendall Graveman wasn't even able to come into the game because they got him up so many times during that the Cubs series and the Red Sox series over the past weekend. And, you know, we see Liam get up for the eighth inning. The White Sox have a big eighth inning, and then they have to put Tanner Banks in. I think part of it, too, was just him getting up, him getting cold, him getting up. Like, I think it was part of that. And if you want to say that's an excuse, maybe, but it's just the weird quirks of baseball. Liam Hendricks is not going to be that bad. Josh Naylor had a ton of confidence, had nothing to lose because they were down six runs going into that inning. He was looking fastball, and he hit the hell out of a fastball. I mean, you know, that's you're going to put the closer that's worth $11 million into the game because he's worth $11 million, but I mean, you just shouldn't be in that position in the first place. It's on Marcotta. It's on Anderson, in my opinion. You got to put the game away. You can't let this other crap happen. That's the sign that this team isn't a championship caliber team, because they're not even able to put away a team that they have under a 6-run lead with Tanner Banks in the game at 9, you know, with a 6-run lead. And he hasn't pitched in, you know, about 11 games. Like, it's really, really frustrating. And I understand why fans are in here saying, you know, they don't have the resolve of championship teams. Like, what the hell does that mean? It's May. Hey, Sean, how you build resolve is losing games and understanding your weaknesses and building.
Hey, Sean, look to your left. You see who it is?
Hey, yeah, what's up? Is Vinny here?
It's Vinny Duber. He's right there to your left.
Vinny Duber, your CHGO White Sox beat writer.
What's up, fellas?
It's to my right on my screen. I don't know if it's different for you guys, but you can follow Vinny Duber on Twitter at Vinny Duber. Hi, Vinny. How you doing tonight?
Hey, guys. I'm doing better than the White Sox are.
Oh God. That's good.
Who'd you talk to tonight?
Yeah, I mean, we got Tony La Russa, obviously. We got A.J. Pollock. We got Ryan Burr, and we got Liam Hendricks. So a lot of the featured players there in the – what Tony La Russa called a brutal loss, a brutal collapse by the White Sox tonight. Yeah, that's a bad one. That's about as bad as of a loss as any team's going to have. But and they weren't happy about it. But you know, they said all the right things afterwards, that it's time to flush it and think about tomorrow. But you could tell it was bothering them. Ryan Burr says everybody in that clubhouse knows we played and pitched like shit.
Boom. Was the mood? I was just going to ask you, was it somber or was it like Ryan Burr, angry?
Yeah, I mean, these kind of things tend to happen on a regular basis in a baseball clubhouse, at least from our perspective going in there after games. I mean, you know, it's wild extremes, right? Whenever there's a win, no matter how early in the year it is or how easy it was or how normal it seems, they are blasting music like they, you know, like it is your senior prom. And then, you know, when it's a loss, even if they got blown out, if they lost by one run, if it was your run-of-the-mill baseball game or something like happened tonight, it is dead quiet in there like you're attending a wake. So hard to judge exactly what the level of displeasure was tonight compared to some other losses, but certainly they kept talking about how much that stung, how much that one hurts, and to quote Ryan Burr, how much that sucked tonight.
It's very eloquently put by Ryan Burr. We've been using the term embarrassing. You said Tony used the word brutal. What did he have to say about the ninth inning mainly, just where the game truly got away, blowing that six-run lead?
Yeah, I mean, I asked him about the errors that were made, and he didn't really think that was a factor, to be quite honest. He thought that he obviously placed his blame on, or, you know, not, you know. He said that they didn't lose the game because of the defense, and in a way he's right, right? I mean, your all-star closer shouldn't be giving up a grand slam with the game on the line. I mean, you know, you shouldn't be giving up six runs. It's not like all six runs were caused by those errors. But if you ask my opinion, I would say that what we saw during that losing streak, what we saw during that losing stretch, was some pretty bad defense at times by the White Sox, and it just happened to bite them in a very bad time, a very poorly timed way tonight, in which, you know, it opened the door for that kind of collapse that we saw from the bullpen. So I think, listen, there's a lot of blame to go around for what happened tonight, and maybe Tony's right that the defense doesn't deserve the majority of it, but I don't think you can ignore the fact that they made four errors tonight.
I'm gonna go.
We were going back and forth thing. I screwed up the weave. It's on me. I found the errors to be truly just eyesores. I mean, the Gavin Sheets one was brutal. The Tim Anderson was lackadaisical. The Yoan one was fairly showboaty. I wonder what Tony has. Is there anything that he can actually say to the fan or anything out there about how they're going to clean up their defense? Right now, they're at an MLB worst, I think 26 errors on the season. Anything specific about cleaning up the defense? Because even if they didn't lose the game, it's still something that needs to be fixed.
Absolutely, and I think that's a big picture question, and that those kind of things usually come the day after. You know what I mean? The manager, especially someone like Tony La Russa, who we know their entire mood depends on the outcome of the game, is going to be talking about the specifics. So I think tomorrow that will definitely be a topic of conversation. And really, let's be honest, until they fix it, it's going to be a topic of conversation every day, because, you know, this is a team that you just said has 26 errors on the season, and that's just – it's just not going to work. I mean, defense is something they talked about going all the way back to last year and what they needed to fix coming out of that Astros series. Now we're still talking about it, and it seems like it's, you know, glaring. It seems like it's in a much worse spot, at least, you know, in the measurables, in the errors and stuff like that. So we're going to be talking about it, no doubt about it. But this is, you know, in the heat of the moment, you know, it's very much specific to the game that was just played.
I was wondering this too, and some of the people in the comments section are also. Maybe I missed it in your earlier thread. Did Kendall Graveman have some type of dead arm? Was he not available for today's game? Because it just seemed weird that he wasn't out in the pitch mix or in the whole bullpen coming into that extra inning affair.
Yeah, there was a lot of questions on Twitter that I got, obviously, in the later stages of that game. And there was actually a fan sitting in front of the press box who kept yelling every time a new pitcher came in, "Where's Kendall Graveman?" I tend to think that this is, you know, a one-game thing until we're told otherwise, right, that not available for today based on, you know, the way that he was used over the last couple of series. Sean, I heard you talking about it when I joined the stream here, and I think that's probably the most reasonable explanation, right, is you get him up and you get him going, and you're pretty well down the road to being counted as used. You know what I mean? So it doesn't necessarily mean, just because you don't see it in the Baseball Reference stat line, that he pitched this day, doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that he didn't work that day, we'll say. But you're right. I mean, I don't think that the point is, hey, we've got this great pitcher left. Why wasn't he used in this one game out of 162? But it's just something that is now a question, right? Why wasn't he available? Is there something going on? What is the fatigue level there? I think Tony La Russa and the White Sox have confidence in their pitchers, regardless of who they are, to get guys out. I mean, it wasn't too long ago that we were talking about Tanner Banks as, you know, this great surprise out of nowhere weapon out of the bullpen, and he's the one that gets a little roughed up tonight. I mean, Liam Hendricks is the back-to-back AL reliever of the year, just saved five games in a row for the White Sox, and he's the one who gives up the grand slam. So, I mean, I don't think it comes down to one pitching change or one pitching change that wasn't made. This is kind of a total bullpen failure this evening.
Yeah, I mean, Hendricks has showed last year he's prone to giving up home runs. And when you don't have the slider working, Naylor clearly guessed fastball. He hit fastball. So I don't want to look at Liam having too many issues. I think that if he's thrown into his normal role, he'll probably perform at a normal rate. I do want to have a little talk here with you guys. I want to talk just a little ball here. I don't know where Graveman would have been used. Maybe in the eighth inning for Foster, but Foster performed fine. I thought he was fine. You know, he was used most recently in that Red Sox game on Sunday. So Graveman was on more rest today. I think maybe that's the only spot you used Graveman is instead of Foster. But outside of that, I really don't see a mismanagement of Graveman here. Am I wrong? Vinny, I'll go to you first.
I think you're absolutely right in saying that had he been available, that would have been the spot he would have been used. And I think he's higher on the depth chart, so to speak, for the eighth inning than Foster is. Now, you can make the argument, of course, if you're someone looking to blame Tony for tonight's loss, that, you know, that Graveman pitches the eighth like normal. And if everything goes the way it went, then in the ninth inning, that you would have Foster available to you for extra innings, who obviously has been one of your more reliable pitchers. That being said, I mean, yeah, I don't think the problem is why didn't Graveman pitch in the 10th or the 11th. It's he wasn't pitching at all, and if he was going to pitch, it was going to be the 8th. We're going all the way down the road here to hypothetical land at this point, but yeah, that's the way I see it.
Did Ryan Burr speak about the pitch he gave up to Josh Naylor? Looked like he just hung a slider there, just got murdered.
Well, yeah, he was actually both Tony and he were asked, you know, do you walk Naylor? In that situation, would have loaded the bases. Obviously, he's having a great night, and that's exactly what both of them said. Tony said he thought about it, didn't end up doing it, and Ryan said that, you know, he wants to go after every hitter. You know, he doesn't care what they've done the night previous or the season previous or their career previous. He's, you know, that's the competitor in him, that he wants to go after everybody. And, you know, yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. Usually it's like, you know, when you're talking about these why didn't they intentionally walk situation, that's to me always, that was a rare thing anyway, right? That's reserved for Barry Bonds or something like that. You know, you've got guys that you think are good. This is supposedly a championship caliber team, a roster built to win the World Series. You should be able to trust in any pitcher that you throw out there, that they're going to be able to get out any hitter that you throw out there. And so, you know, those kind of things come into play in the playoffs. It's May. And I just don't think that, you know, that the whole intentional walk, you know, strategy to get around this thing, because this is the most important game ever. Like, it's May. It's May. And, yeah, this was brutal. This was bad. This is about as bad a loss as you're going to see. But it also is May.
Well, and honestly, the only guy that I considered them walking would have been in the top of the 11th, but it would have been Ramirez. Mm-hmm. After they get Kwan out, I would have made it first and second walking Ramirez. They ended up doing it anyways. I just would have given him the free pass there. But outside of that, I really wouldn't even entertain walking Naylor. I said this on Twitter. I was shit talking Josh Naylor in my head before this game this entire time. I'm like, this is the guy that we're afraid of in the middle of their lineup with no batting gloves on. And, you know, well, here he comes hitting home runs. Shutting my head up. So I just found that funny. I wouldn't have walked Naylor. I didn't have too many issues with that. You did talk to Tony though. No mention of Kopech just yet. I do want to talk about his six innings. He was great today. What did Tony have to say? We saw Michael's reaction too after being taken out after his performance against the Cubs after about four innings there. And he was really, you know, upset with his performance or not being able to go the distance. What was the talk in the clubhouse about him going the six innings?
Yeah, in fact, the end of the game has, you know, made Kopech's outing so, ancient history, so to speak, that was the focus of Tony's postgame. But we did talk to Michael Kopech after the game, and he was happy with the way he pitched, as he should be. And really, it was what Liam Hendricks said, was that the bullpen's mad that they couldn't get Kopech a win because he earned it and he deserved it. So in terms of the workload at this point, you know, this is going to be a season-long thing with Kopech, is talking about how many innings he went and how many innings he didn't go and that kind of thing. But listen, he was excellent tonight. He was terrific. And I think that the overarching point here should be that the White Sox have something in Michael Kopech. Not that they didn't think they did, but that we didn't know what he was going to be able to do from a workload standpoint, from a hasn't been a full-time starter in years standpoint. And here he's going out there and he is pitching as impressively as anyone under those circumstances. Obviously Dylan Cease has been electric. Lucas Giolito has been reliable and doing what he's expected to do. Michael Kopech has perhaps been the biggest surprise of the White Sox rotation, and in a very positive manner for this team. So if they can keep getting what they're getting from him, the giant question mark that it seemed the rotation had before the season started is gone. And that is that's a huge, huge deal, because you're looking at a rotation, especially once they get Lance Lynn back, that is going to start looking an awful lot like that one last year. That was the best starting rotation in the American League through the end of the regular season, and they really carried this team at times.
Kopech now with the lowest ERA in the major leagues as he qualifies. He still has no wins and no losses. Speaking of a guy who has all the wins, we saw Raylo leave the game in the 11th inning, Ronaldo Lopez. Any update for his injury that happened in the top of the 11th?
Yeah, it was weird. Low back tightness is what it was called, and it must have been something that happened while he was warming up that inning, because he went out there for warm-up pitches, and then right before the inning's supposed to start, you see Tony coming out with the trainer. So we didn't get any word other than that, and I'm sure that that's something that they're evaluating from day to day here. We'll get more clarity on it tomorrow if that's something that's going to bother him moving forward. But yeah, something that he must have felt, or maybe something that was identified from the dugout even while he was throwing those warm-up pitches.
Staying on the injury train, I do want to talk about Aaron Bummer getting hurt. We see Joe Kelly make his White Sox debut in the 7th inning. We see also Yoan Moncada come back. We see Jake Berger get sent down. Could you talk about Bummer's injury, and could you talk about the return of Moncada and then, you know, Kelly coming to the team and then Berger going down?
Yes, hold on. Let me jot that down. I need to, you know, make some notes there.
My bad. There's a reason I'm at home.
I'm just joking.
This closet, very, very fumey. You know what I'm talking about?
I see. Yeah. I would go ahead and open the door maybe. But yeah, I could.
Oh, no, it's open. It's open.
All right.
Oh,
I can't, maybe I open can't the bedroom this. Door too. open a window or something. But to try and cover everything you just asked me about, Aaron Bummer is not worried that his injury is going to last too long past the and Rick Hahn even said the same thing, not last too long past the 15 days that he's going to be up. Remember that injured list stayed. Length is changed now all of a sudden in the middle of the year. So yeah, 15 days for Aaron Bummer. They don't think it's going to go much past that. Andrew Vaughn probably not going to be back on Thursday when he's eligible to come off, but might be only a couple of days after that. We've got, what else did you ask me about? Joe Kelly's here. Jake, he's Berger. Very good. Yeah. Yoan Moncada is here. He had an eventful evening, certainly on both ends of the spectrum. I think so I'll let you in on a little hint here. I saw our guy Ryan Herrera tweeting about what he was calling from the office. If you call something on TV, is it when you're watching on TV? Not sure how brag-worthy that is. So I'm going to go ahead and throw a little shade and say that I called the Grand Slam from inside the stadium. So there's that. There's a little brag there. But yeah, but then also I attempted on multiple occasions to call the welcome back walk-off for Yoan Moncada. It didn't work. But again, an eventful day for him. Jake Berger went down basically because Jake Berger can only play third base. That's pretty much what it came down to. The offensive numbers have not been good, even though there's been some positive moments for him. And I think a lot of people were comparing him to Gavin Sheets in that regard, who also has not had very good offensive numbers this season, but had a big home run tonight to get off the schneid a little bit. Of course, Gavin Sheets is capable of playing multiple positions. Right field is one of those, and he made a horrendous error there in the first inning, which I'm sure he would like to have back. That's the reasoning there is the versatility. And they've got so many pitchers on this roster that they need the few bench players that they have to be able to be plugged in a variety of spots. And Jake Berger not really capable of doing that.
Did anybody speak about how filthy Joe Kelly was today? Because mercy, I did not know. I thought I knew he was good, but God damn it, that man is great. 99 mile per hour sinker with tail and movement. Mercy.
Hey, there's a reason that every time I brought him up in the last couple of weeks, everybody was laughing. And I think it's because they realized just how many weapons are going to be in that bullpen. Now, it's a tough night to, pump up the bullpen with the way things played out. But when you've got Hendricks, Graveman, Kelly at the back end, and then you throw in all these other guys who have impressed in their own way, plus the guy that Aaron Bummer is supposed to be for this team. That's the kind of bullpen you build for the playoffs, right? And really every year, contending teams make an addition to that group at the trade deadline too. So this could be one of those bullpens. Of course, that's what we were saying at the beginning of last season. Didn't turn out that way. That's what we were saying at the trade deadline last season after they got Craig Kimbrell. Didn't turn out that way. So obviously a long way to go. But you got to like the veteran, the track records of the guys at the back end of that bullpen right now in Hendricks, Graveman, and Kelly. And obviously you saw Kelly for the first time and what he can do tonight.
Yeah, and he did his job, so we can't be too mad at Joe Kelly. I mean, it was after Joe Kelly when things got rough. You did mention A.J. Pollock, another new addition to the White Sox, a former teammate of Joe Kelly with the Los Angeles Dodgers. He hits his first home run in a White Sox uniform, finally got that monkey off his proverbial back there. How did he feel after hitting that one out?
I think the proverbial thing in that phrase is the monkey. Because his back, he has a back. He doesn't really have a monkey on it.
Don't screw that up.
But I'll let it slide. I'll let it slide. But it was fortuitous. Before the game, Rick Hahn talked about A.J. Pollock and that, this guy has a track record. This guy has been a proven successful hitter at the major league level. Only a matter of time before he gets going again. And really, coincidentally, in talking about the team as a whole and how there are several guys who haven't really played up to their numbers yet this season, he said, I can envision a stretch where A.J. Pollock will carry the team. And, I think a lot of fans out there might read that and go, really now? That hasn't really, we haven't really seen any of that. But he's the kind of hitter who has done that for small stretches in the past during his career. And I think you saw tonight what the White Sox were hoping for when they signed him. And certainly they're expecting to see more of that as time goes on.
The atmosphere sounded great from the television. How was it there? Maybe a little sparse crowd action there. What was the attendance and how was the atmosphere for the Southside Mondays after coming back from a 6-game road trip where you won most of them? Or 5-game road trip where you won all of them, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was under 18,000, the paid attendance, but that's not surprising for a Monday night in May. But finally, we had some good weather, some good temperature, some baseball-like feeling here on the south side. So I would expect those, if the winds keep coming, to those crowds to get bigger. But, you know, it's Monday night. It's a school night, Herb, and it's already quarter after midnight. So, you know, I can understand why people don't want to drive all the way down here, bring their kids, and then be given a 4.5-hour baseball game or whatever the hell that was that we just sat through.
Yeah, we had a guy in Israel watching our pregame show. It was 3 o'clock in the morning there. It's 7 o'clock when it ended. Now it's probably like 8. So, yeah, I hope Eli is not watching at all. And
I mean, I would imagine that now Eli's at work, right?
Ugh, right. God, just pissed off all day long.
He went to bed probably sometime before that ninth inning, I would imagine.
You're fool about the White Sox. I hope they know about it over there.
I think he went to bed with White Sox dreams in his head and then woke up to a nightmare. You know what I'm saying? All right, so that's going to wrap it with Vinny Duber. I think you should check out all of his work on allchgo.com. He has a new article about Johnny Cueto as well. We haven't talked about Johnny Cueto, but we should see him soon. You'll get all the details over at allchgo.com with Vinny's new article. He also recapped the horrible question I asked him about Jake Berger and Yoan Moncada. He actually wrote a very well thought out and edited article, unlike my question, over
it's
at
allchgo.com. Tuesday, Sean. Give yourself a break.
It's like, I guess it is Tuesday now. Boom. It was Monday. But Vinny, final thing. You did mention Rick Hahn. You talked to Rick Hahn. Any other news or notes that we might have missed from Rick Hahn today that you want to share?
Not terribly, you know, breaking news or anything like that. You mentioned Cueto, and we got a few more comments on him, and it'll be very interesting to see how that plays out. But Yasmani Grandal has been of interest, I think, the first month and a half here. Not catching very regularly. You know, maybe I think he's only twice. There's only twice where he's caught on back-to-back days, and one of those was interrupted by the second game of a doubleheader on day one there. So, be very interesting to see how they handle him, and apparently this is just the plan to kind of ease him in to make sure that he's going to be ready for October. Very much the same explanation they're giving for the way they're going to use Kopech throughout the season. So I think we've all been sitting around wondering, like, why isn't the number one catcher catching very often? But, you know, you might expect 4 out of 5 days from him, and that's not what has happened. So, but basically the explanation was they're not only confident in what Reese McGuire can do, but they're basically just really slow playing Yasmani to make sure that he's going to be ready to go. I did ask, do you expect the frequency of his games caught to go up as the year progresses? And he said, I would think so. So there you go.
There you go, Herb. Rick's talking to you. That's
not directly.
That's his messenger. No, not directly. But Vinny, we'll talk to you directly on Twitter, and he will send you great articles when you become a member at allchgo.com. So what are you waiting for? Go to allchgo.com and go read Vinny's great work. He is a crucial and integral part to our team. So go follow the CHGO White Sox beat writer on Twitter at Vinny Duber. Vinny, thank you for your work, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you, guys. Cheer up and go to bed. Good morning to all.
You too. And let's go pay some bills, because you can sign up to be a member at allchgo.com. And when you do sign up, you will get a free shirt upon sign up. But there's also a fun deal. If you want to support CHGO, you can download the PointsBet app and use code CHGO when you sign up. If you do that right now, you get 2 risk-free bets up to $2,000. But that's not it. If you make a $50 or more first-time deposit, you'll receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content. And you'll even get a free shirt of your choice from a CHGO locker. That's $2,000 in free bets, a free CHGO membership, and a free t-shirt from a CHGO locker, all for signing up or all for using the code CHGO when you make a $50 or more first time deposit at PointsBet. If you have any questions, you can email pointsbet@allchgo.com and we will help you out. PointsBet is your home for live in play betting, and it just got even better. Introducing PointsBet's newest feature, the live NBA same game parlay. For the first time ever, you can build the perfect live NBA same game parlay only with PointsBet. You can combine your favorite bets anytime during the game, and if you want more, you can also boost your live same game parlays. You can watch live, parlay live, and boost live with PointsBet. Online signup is available in Illinois. You can download the PointsBet app right now and register your account from start to finish, all from your phone. So what are you waiting for? Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life with PointsBet. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. And I want to talk to you about our next partner. They have a product that I literally use every day. I started taking AG1s about, 6 weeks ago when I started my first full-time job. I wanted to get into a routine each and every morning when I woke up. And I wake up using my Athletic Greens because it doesn't taste super healthy. It kind of has a mild tropical taste that I look forward to each and every morning. Herb looks forward to it each and every morning. He's able to easily put into his smoothies each morning and make sure that he's getting 75 important high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, and probiotics and adaptogens with one delicious scoop of AG1s. You're getting all of that goodness. Again, 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews, and it's lifestyle-friendly whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free. And right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop of a cup of water in every day. That's it. No needs of a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. Again, 8 to 12 ounces of water. You put a scoop of AG1s in. You're getting 75 high-quality vitamins and minerals. Herb, he skips the water thing. He puts it in his smoothies.
I put it in the smoothie.
So, you like make the mix.
Yeah, I make the mix, and then I put it into the smoothie, which already has almond milk and then a bunch of fruit in it, so it's delicious. Like that tropical taste you're already talking about. I got mangoes. I got bananas. I got some pineapple in there.
Can't you just put the packet in though?
You can if you want to. Okay. But I like to dissolve the product in the water and then introduce it to the smoothie.
There you go. That's Athletic Greens hacks right there from Herb Lawrence. To make it easy too, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/CHGOSOX. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/CHGOSOX to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Always good to talk to Vinny Herb. I know that you love his stops, and you want to make sure that you check out his great work at allchgo.com.
He makes me feel a little bit better every time we get to speak to him because he has a cheery disposition about himself. He's not a fan like we are. He comes at it at a clinical, very sterile way of looking at baseball. I am still pissed. Vinny will go to sleep happy as hell. Me, I'll be up for hours now thinking about this goddamn loss. Tweeting, thinking about, man, why couldn't we do this? Why did we... Like, I'm still mad at that, even though it didn't really count. Oh, my God, Eli's still... Oh, my God, Eli's still with us. Our guy from Israel.
He is at work.
Oh, my God, Eli. You're a champion. You're a champion, Eli.
Watching at work.
I am tired right now, Eli. And it's like 8 damn o'clock, 8:19 in Israel. 8:20
in the morning.
Eli, did you get sleep, my man? You must have just, 3 a.m. and it's now what, Steven?
8:20 a.m.?
Yes. You get 5 hours of sleep, Eli? You need to sleep, my man. That's not healthy.
Eli's a White Sox fan.
He schedules his day around the CHGO White Sox.
I mean, I appreciate you listening and watching, Eli, and all the people who are listening on the podcast. We had Eli in the pregame. He's in Israel right now. It was 3 a.m. So we start singing songs about Matchbox 20. Like that one. And I was like, there's no way Eli at the ninth inning was probably like, man, I'm going to sleep. Catch me a couple hours before I got to go to the gig. Nope. Eli just stayed up and watched the White Sox falter. Now I got to go to the gig for another 8-9 hours. I don't even know if, Israel works like 10 hours like we do here in America because it's dumb. But Eli, God bless, man. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And I hope you have a great day and forget about this loss because you don't deserve it, Eli. You're better than that.
And I like Eric Fenton saying Eli
went to sleep at 9. Wait, you went to sleep at 9 and then woke up at 3 a.m.? Wow, Eli's a champion.
Whoa, yeah, that's crazy. Thank you, Eli, for sticking up with us and watching us over in Israel.
Do it tomorrow, too, and, Eli.
I agree with Jason J saying, I'm sorry, Eli, you deserve better. That is the truth. Hopefully the White Sox can bounce back tomorrow. The White Sox will have Lucas Giolito going to the bump versus Cal Quantrill. Before we get back, because I feel like we're going to revisit this game, Herb, we'll be talking about this. We got still a couple minutes to talk.
Why? Do we have to revisit the game?
Well, then let's go. I was going to try to give you a little bit more of a buffer before we went back to the game. We talked to Vinny. Vinny talked about Jake Berger going down to Charlotte. Jake Berger going down because of his versatility. Yep. What do you think about that? We discussed the whole Gavin Sheets thing possibly going down after he bunted yesterday versus a right-handed pitcher. He makes up for it, hitting one into the seats today, but he also had that ugly drop pop fly in right field.
As I said yesterday, I thought that Gavin Sheets deserved to go down to AAA more than Jake Berger, but they would choose handedness since Sheets is a left-handed hitter. And Vinny said he can play the multiple positions. Right field can play that one and first base. I think Berger can play right field, especially if you're going to play it like that, Gavin Sheets. And he's a third baseman, so he probably has a nice right fielder's arm too. So if we're doing by meritocracy, it should have been either Danny Mendick or Gavin Sheets going down there before Berger, who himself deserved to go down to the minors. Don't get it twisted. He wasn't having an awesome season where you couldn't send him back down. His offense was falling off a little bit. That's what happens when you expose a player who's not necessarily an everyday player to more playing time, a.k.a. Lurie Garcia. But he did well with the glove. He did well with running bases and such. He was a very valuable piece, and I expect him to come back to the White Sox and contribute to a team that will win the AL Central. That's why I'm mad today, because they keep on losing to garbage teams like the Guardians. I don't give a goddamn if they can hit well. They're not good. I told you about Zach Plesac. He was trash. Exactly how we said. Our guy Edgar was right on track. We had an 8-2 score. So Edgar said 7-1 in the pregame. We're right on track with the margin of victory. And the White Sox said, F Edgar. I don't want you to win, Edgar. I don't want you to get this shine in the White Sox, CHGO White Sox postgame. So we're going to mess this game up and go to extras and make it the Josh Naylor game. Well, and finest. And KPW's happy as hell. Is his Canadian brethren coming yes. through?
And Fred said that this postgame is supposed to happen at 10:15, and then the White Sox defense said, hold my beer. So, KPW saying, hey, guys, my fellow Canadian did you guys dirty, A. He didn't say A. I added the A there. Because he's Canadian, A.
Tim Bits. Yeah. Tim Hortons.
I'm
hockey. Garbage goals.
The Tragically Hip. You ever hear them?
I've never heard of the songs, but I've heard of that band, yes.
Oh, you should listen to New Orleans is Sinking. That song is great. It's not, I mean, they're different bands. Rush are innovators. Tragically Hip are poets, you know?
The Outfield.
They're Canadian?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want to lose them tonight, you know?
Play Deep. It was their album, I believe.
I just know them because of Gordon Beckham.
I think Mike Reno's the lead singer. I know Mike Outfield. Jaxo says, I can't believe we brought in Tanner Banks in that situation when it should have brought in Hendricks. Not necessarily, I don't agree with it. It was 8-2 in the ninth inning. Your closer in a non-closing situation, don't use him there. They already got him up once they got the lead up to 8-2. I'm fine with Tanner Banks working there. Just pick the ball up. Tanner Banks gave up a home run. Cool, 8-3. Pick the ball up after the single. Then you have a double play available to you, the next hitter. Instead, you throw the ball around. Timmy misses it. You have a runner on third. Then another error by Yoan Moncada where you could have had another out right there. Just pick the ball up. And I don't think Liam Hendricks should have been used at all in the ninth inning if we do the things right like we're supposed to. At most, it should have been an 8-4 game.
Well, and he hasn't been used, Tanner Banks, since May 1st. This is his first outing in, 10 days here, or I guess 9 days at that point. It makes no sense, honestly, to go to him at that point. Now I'm talking myself out of it. I'm thinking about Jaxo's point. If they brought in Hendricks, I wouldn't have hated it because they got him up.
I messed up. The outfield is English. I was thinking about Loverboy the whole time.
Loverboy's Canadian?
Yeah.
Huh. Who knew? Anyway,
I don't want to lose your love.
You that's Rob the outfield. Manfred? Rob Manfred's bringing a baseball team to the UK. Did you see that? He promised the London mayor that.
Yeah, we're not going.
They're gonna name it after the outfield, and they're all gonna walk up to that stupid damn song. I do want to talk to about Fred saying Liam isn't the best coming on with guys on base. That's true as well. Weird. I mean, with the fact that he could only throw a fastball, it was just it's clunky. It was all clunky with the Sox in the ninth inning because you get Hendricks up, and if they put him in there, I wouldn't have hated it. And then if Banks does his job and they don't have all these horrible errors, we don't have a pissed off post game tonight, and it's real easy and clean. I'm bouncing everywhere too, just because it's brutal, Herb. I mean, I feel so bad that I'm here and not there. This what are you?
I'm in your seat right now. Do you think that putting Liam up, you know, because you thought it's maybe a save situation, then sitting him back down and then bringing him back up and then put him into the game, as they say, with a dirty inning there, really affected him? Maybe his grip on the slider was off. He couldn't find the control command for that slider because he was dirting that shit early.
And this is why we work together well here, Herb, because I'm struggling to find my points. That's exactly it. I felt he was absolutely amped up. There's a reason why that fastball, the nailer, was 99, because the sliders he was throwing was 91. I think that he just got out of his rhythm. He got out of his schedule. He got out of his routine. We talk about how much routine means to these players. I think he got out of his routine, and I think that the fact that he went back down after that Pollock homer, I think that's probably what set him off and led to him having a rough outing. He was still able to locate that fastball, but at that point, he's a one-pitch pitcher. And again, that's why Naylor's able to strike off the slider. He's not expecting that 0-1. He's not expecting the curveball 0-1. He's expecting that fastball 0-0 right where it was, and that's why he took it out to right center field. So I would say that him getting up, him getting down was probably the worst thing. And maybe that's where you go to Graveman in that situation. You start putting him up once that error happens and Rosario ends up being on third base.
You know what I figured out, Sean? The 6-game winning streak, 4 runs or less, we scored way too many runs. Right. Stop scoring all these goddamn runs, White Sox. And they scored 5. I was like, we're in trouble. We're going to lose this game.
And they finally get outputs from A.J. Pollock and Gavin Sheets, and you're just like, finally. Like, they get it off their backs. They're just like, oh, we get the great performance from them, and we get to call it a day. And then, you know,
Before we get too negative, and we've covered this game very negative, I know we spoke to Vinny about it, but your thoughts on Mr. Michael Kopech tonight?
Yes, let's get to that. First off, let's talk about a game changer, because I think Michael Kopech is a game changer. But if you want a competitive edge, obviously have Michael Kopech in your starting rotation. But Strava CBD Coffee is a true game changer and has helped thousands of people to help improve their overall wellness and quality of life. Strava delivers delicious, fresh roasted specialty coffee infused with organic broad spectrum CBD. CBD from hemp doesn't make you high or hungry, but it offers real benefits that can help you feel alert and focus without the jitters. Live your day more balanced with less anxiety and fewer aches and pains. And my favorite part of Strava, which is introducing CBD into your daily routine, can help you enjoy a more restful sleep so you wake up feeling your best. I have felt the importance of having that in my daily routine. I like to have the decaffeinated version of Strava. I like to drink it before I go to bed, and it does help me sleep better each and every night. The best part, Strava is all about quality. Everything is small batch, fresh, and shipped straight to your door. Strava also offers concentrated full spectrum CBD tinctures for those looking for a more traditional CBD format with a powerful entourage effects of benefits. CHGO listeners can save 25% off their entire purchase when you use code CHGO25. That's 25% off your entire order at StravaCraftCoffee.com when you use code CHGO25 at checkout. Discount coupon valid on non-subscription purchases only, one use per customer. And if you already love Strava, subscribe and save with the Strava Coffee Club. With Strava, you're in control. Save on your favorite coffees and have them automatically delivered to your home or offices on your preferred schedule. Again, 25% off your entire purchase when you use code CHGO25. That's 25% off your entire order at StravaCraftCoffee.com. Let's talk about Michael Kopech. He did go 6 innings, which was very, very impressive to see. And I thought what was really, really great from Kopech today was the ability to load up the zone with strikes, but also I liked his ability to battle. It was an ugly first inning for him. He should have been out of it with that Gavin Sheets error. He ends up going into the 20s in his pitch mix. You see the final line there, 6 innings pitched, one run was not earned because of the Gavin Sheets error. So 1 run allowed, 2 hits allowed, 2 walks, 7 Ks. But Stoney said it, like it looked like he wasn't really there. It looked like he wasn't really finding it. But then it felt like he really started to settle in the fourth inning. And it just felt like Michael, he's not there in the first inning. but it still is effective. And he might not be there in the second inning or the third inning, but it's effective. And my favorite part was when he gets a strike, it's a ball that ends, it should have been a strike, but it's right off the plate, and he gets so pissed off at the umpire, and you could see it. And he's trying not to yell at the umpire, but he's trying to let the umpire know that he is pissed off. And then he gets back on the mound, and he looks dead at Reese McGuire, and he looks dead at the umpire, and he looks dead at Owen Miller, and says, do you know what? I'm not putting this into Carlos, I think it's Perez's, I forget the umpire's last name.
Charlie Ramos, I believe.
Thank you. Charlie Ramos. He looks dead. He's like, I'm not putting this in Charlie Ramos's hands. I'm throwing 97 right down the middle of the plate. And Owen Miller just stares at it like, like Stoney talked about the life on Michael's fastball. And he showed the life there. And Michael geared up through 97. And you just saw the FU-ness of Michael Kopech late in that game, and he figured out how to make it all work, and then he figured out how to shove it down your throat. And that's what I loved about Kopech's outing today.
And what I learned in that bat is you don't send an ISU Redbird to hit a ball versus Michael Kopech.
All right, take it easy on the Redbirds, all right?
That was for our guy, Steven Nicholas, is a ISU Redbird, and our guy, Chris Ranji, too. He went to that school, too. But yeah, that is, I saw the same thing, and I was like, man, it's a great game to watch, apparently, Owen Miller. Damn, what were you expecting there? It's two strikes. He just threw you a B pitch. Perfectly up on the outer corner, up top on the strike zone. I don't know what my man Charlie Ramos was watching, because that was a strike every day of the week. He missed a couple of those. He was, for the most part, Charlie was on his game. Not a full-time Major League umpire as yet, but I could see a future for that guy because he was pretty good with balls and strikes for the most part. But, yeah, okay. Michael Kopech has it. Mm-hmm. He didn't, as we saw before, 25-pitch first inning. His teammates let him down. What does he do? He picks them up. He says, I got you guys. I know you guys are kicking the ball back behind me, but I got you, baby. We're good to go. Here's a strikeout. Here's a curveball. Here's a slider. Here's 97. Can you hit it? No, you can't. This vaunted Indians team came into
Guardians.
Damn it! Came into this game as the second least K rate in Major League Baseball with 19.7. Michael Kopech said, I don't give a goddamn who the hell y'all is. Y'all can't hit me. That confidence that he has, that Dylan Cease has, that Lucas Giolito has from time to time is hard to buy. And he knows that no team, no matter if you're the best hitting team, and he went against Jose Ramirez. He's like, hey, man, I ain't scared of you. Herb might be scared of you. You better buy a dog, but I ain't. I got you. And struck out seven Guardians tonight. That tells you a lot about that man and the White Sox pitching staff up until the ninth inning. They were striking out a bunch of Guardians today. It's great to see that we have that guy that is a top of the rotation, and we have three of them at least. Like, I don't know who's better, Dylan Cease or him. And going to the future, it's going to be a battle for the Cy Young. Because I'm serious. If these guys keep healthy, their track is to the moon. And hi, Paul Correa. It's good to see you, brother.
Hi, Paul Correct. He's working on an AJ Pollock impression. I don't know if you heard about that.
Is it like just Dower and, hey, guys?
Yeah, it's probably
AJ Pollock, guys. You see my home run?
It's probably his Jake Lamb impersonation, which I love. So I'll hear all of his impersonations that he wants to send. But kind of like
a Jake Lamb impersonation. That wasn't Jake Lamb?
Alexander Moss said, so are we going to be able to sign Kopech, Cease, and Giolito? Because they're all looking like $180 million plus pitchers. Maybe I should just enjoy them while it lasts. I think you should. I think that's what you should be enjoying. I mean, we saw the bitterness back and forth between the Sox and Giolito this offseason. I don't think they're going to come to a long-term deal. Maybe they're able to get something with Cease, but let's check out who his agent is. Oh, it's Scott Boras, and Michael Kopech is basically a thoroughbred horse of pitching. So they're going to have to pay someone. It just really depends on who they're going to pick. And I think that could be the debate, the big debate for Sox fans. It will be an annoying debate, but it will be Cease or Kopech, because I really don't think they're going to sign Giolito, even though I would love for them to sign Giolito.
That's either or I can say both.
I mean, I think the question is, if you're asking both, everyone would say both because they're damn good pitchers. Would say, you know, make it a little bit more difficult. You have to pick one. I'd probably go Cease, but ask me on a different day. Yeah,
that's a Sophie's choice.
It's a tough one. Would you go Cease or Kopech if you had to pick one for the rest of the career? I think I'd go Cease today.
It's of course it's Cease because he's never really been hurt in the major leagues, and Kopech is oft injured.
And Tommy John already too.
Exactly, and so you saw your first quality start out of Michael Kopech today. First time he went six innings this year. I can see it though. Everybody can see it. It is a Sophie's choice of pitchers. Like, I think at their highest points, Michael Kopech is the better pitcher. Because he doesn't even know how to pitch yet. He's just throwing for the most part. You see the pitcher developing. Once he becomes a pitcher, like I was saying earlier in the pregame, where he's not looking to strike out guys, he's looking to just get weak contact so he can be a little bit more efficient, which he was today. It was awesome because he pitched those 25-plus pitches in the first inning, and then by the fifth inning, he was in his 70s. I was like, man, that is a Houdini act. That's why you get to the sixth inning. That's how you complete that game or complete the six innings that he did today. So I say if I had to guess now, I'm going with Kopech is my horse over Cease, and that's just barely.
I just like that Cease has two for sure breaking balls right now. His fastball is more straight than Kopech. Kopech has probably the best fastball, one of the best fastballs in the major leagues right now. But if Cease ever develops a changeup, then I think things get really hairy. And I think that, you know, Kopech can't really match up with a pitcher who can throw four pitches, but that's not there yet. So, and I don't think there's a bad choice because both guys look like absolute studs right now. I think we've got to everything, Herb. It's good to see Yoan Moncada back. I think we can look at some positives. Good to see that happen. Like you mentioned, even though they lost, good to see them get over 9 runs today. And we can just look, I think, at the big negative of today. The bullpen has been better than it has been today. So hopefully, you know, you don't blow another 6-run lead. The defense, though, is probably the biggest takeaway because that needs to be fixed. That's been a constant issue against this Cleveland team and versus every other team. There's a reason you're leading the league in errors this year. So I think that's the biggest thing that needs to be cleaned up from this White Sox team is less, you know, the bullpen and less the hitting, because I think the hitting is going to come around. You saw that today, but it's the defense that really needs to get cleaned up for the Sox.
Yeah, Joe Kelly, too. That bullpen is in good hands. Yes. And I see that Eric wants to go with Cease. Same thing with Eli out there in Israel. Hey, man, there's no wrong answer right there, even though I'm wrong with my Kopech pick, apparently.
I don't think you're wrong. I think, you know, it is, like you said, a very, very tough choice. Also, two more things. Steven, I think we have these graphics, so I don't think I'm too much of a pain in the ass here to throw these out here. The Joe Kelly ones, what's that?
It's 239. I mean, 1239. It doesn't matter.
Here's Joe Kelly. Joe Kelly, here's all of his strikes, and you just see the guy's missing the middle of the plate, and if he is hitting the middle of the plate, it's down. It's perfect to see that. Love to see Joe Kelly and the way that he pitched. His stuff was nasty, so shout out to Joe Kelly. Had a great debut in a Sox uniform. And then the final one is the run index one, the run expectancy matrix one, where it has all this one. Yeah, runners on base, and you see empty, runner on first base, runner on second base, runner on first and second, et cetera, et cetera. And by outs and one out and two outs, this is just to go to, I think it was the bottom of the 10th inning, Herb, where they ended up doing a sacrifice bunt with Leury. Just want to make sure. Yeah, they end up bunting with Leury and moving runners from first to second to second and third with one out. And I saw people bringing it up and just talking about the sacrifice bunt choice. You could see there with no outs, runners on first and second, run expectancy of 1.373. When you go to second and third with one out, 1.352. I don't mind the difference to sacrifice bunt there just because you do have a sac fly opportunity, and then it did force them to walk TA, which then I guess was the downfall because you get the force out at home. But I didn't mind the decision to at least move those runners over to second and third. I know you obviously disagree, but the numbers there kind of show you it's a toss up, and I would rather have two guys in scoring position there than guys on first and second. So that's just me. But
the only reason I disagree is because you're giving out an out. You're giving up an out there. Right. And yes, I understand. You're only trying to score one run because at that time the game is tied. Moving the guys over to second and third keeps you out of the double play. Then they have to walk Tim to get to Yoan. I would rather have Lurie Garcia, who's swinging a hot bat, to get some hits off of Class A. Was it Class A at the time?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I would. Hey, Class A was getting rocked. AJ Pollock with a rocket shot to right field off of Class A. He was blowing it past Yoan and with a weak contact there to shortstop, threw the ball home to get the force out, and the same thing pretty much for Jose, and he got the fielder's choice to end that inning. I don't detest the sack bunt there, but always I will side on the part where you say you have a hitter, go to bat, go through. If he strikes out, he strikes out. But at least you're not giving up an out automatically. And so, yeah, I understand the thought process. Only one run you need to score, but just giving up outs always hurt me. It always does. Unless you're giving it up out for a run right there, but you didn't do that. So
my favorite.
I'm not gonna get on Tony too badly about that. That's a thing where I think 95% of the people believe that was the correct move. Go with it.
I don't think it was a correct move. I don't think it was. I mean, if it works out, you're not going to bash it. If it doesn't work out, again, I don't think it's the reason they lost, because they chose to have a sacrifice bunt there. But it is an interesting, you know, strategy discussion there. But my favorite comment of the night is going to go to Zach Fakename, who says MLB needs to ban the bunt because it is just so hot. It is so toxic that's my type of brand. And that's my type of content right there. Just ban it completely so I don't have to talk about
it. I'm in.
That's Herb Lawrence.
I know my guy, the Miz, is in for it too.
Yeah, absolutely. You can follow Herb Lawrence on Twitter at EchnerWall23. Thank you to Vinny Duber for joining us from Guaranteed Rate Field. You can follow him on Twitter at Vinny Duber. I'm Sean Anderson. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson. We started off with over, I think it was like 40 people before we even started the live stream, and we still got 70 strong in here. So thank you to all of you for joining us in the chat. All of our podcast listeners, we hope you enjoy. And thank you to Stephen Nicholas for your great production. We will talk to you tomorrow, and hopefully the Sox will clean things up and get a win versus the Guardians. For Herb Lawrence, Vinny Duber, Stephen Nicholas, I'm Sean Anderson. We'll talk to you tomorrow, and go Sox.